From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, the governor delivers his six regional State of the State addresses. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, will share his thoughts on the governor's speeches and their potential national appeal. And there may be progress in a call to overhaul the state's juvenile justice system. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo delivered his six regional State of the State addresses this week. He saved his ethics proposal for his last stop on the State of the State tour in Albany Wednesday, where he released a 10-point plan to address rampant corruption that has reached his own administration. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt was there and filed this report.
The proposals come after a corruption wave at the Capitol that's led to prison sentences for both former legislative leaders, jail time for a former state controller, and federal charges including bribery and bid rigging against nine Cuomo associates, including his former top aide, Joe Percoco, whom Cuomo's father, former Governor Mario Cuomo, referred to as his third son.
And unfortunately, in Albany, there have been a series of breaches of the trust. It has happened in the legislature, both houses. It's happened in the state controller's office. It's happened in my own office.
Cuomo wants to pass two constitutional amendments. One would ban outside income for legislators. Another would impose term limits. He also wants to shut a campaign finance loophole that allows donors to form limited liability companies to get around contribution limits and also enact public campaign financing. The governor also is seeking remedies for corruption in his own administration. He'd create a special inspector general to look at economic development and other contracts processed by the state and city university systems. The former head of SUNY Polytechnic, Elaine Calieros, who oversaw many of the governor's upstate economic development projects, is under criminal indictment for bid rigging and other charges. And Cuomo wants to ban campaign contributions from contractors who are vying for state contracts, known as requests for proposals or RFPs.
There can be no political contributions from anyone bidding on that RFP and no political contributions from the winner of the RFP for 6 months after it's done.
The timing of some contributions from developers to the governor coincided with the developers winning state contracts, although no one has been accused of wrongdoing in those cases. Government reform groups who have seen previous reform measures stall say the governor has to actively campaign for them if he really wants them to become law. Blair Horner is with the New York Public Interest Research Group.
What's really going to determine whether or not anything happens is if the governor decides to involve the public in the fight and that he hits the road, similar to what he did on the $15 minimum wage, to really galvanize public support behind his plans.
Cuomo toured the state on a bus to promote the minimum wage hike, which the legislature agreed to in last year's budget. Horner says he'd like to see a proposal to create more independent ethics oversight that's not controlled by the governor or the legislature. Barbara Bartoletti with the League of Women Voters, who attended the speech, agrees that Cuomo will have to make an extra effort to get the proposals through the Senate and Assembly.
I think you'd need a whole new legislature because I think the constitutional amendments on term limits and outside income are probably dead on arrival in the legislature.
But she says if lawmakers agreed to close campaign finance loopholes, it would go a long way toward cleaning up corruption. The head of the state's Republican Party, Ed Koch, says Cuomo has a poor track record when it comes to ethics reform. He says the governor opened a special Moreland Act commission, then shuttered it when members started to investigate Cuomo's office.
He didn't want to be examined himself. Now he's being examined through the corruption of his closest associates, nine of them, including, quote-unquote, his third brother.
Prococo, Calieros, and six others go on trial for corruption later this year. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Meanwhile, the day before his last two speeches in Syracuse and Albany, Governor Cuomo delivered the third of his six regional State of the State addresses in New York's Hudson Valley. One of his proposals got positive feedback, while another is facing some criticism, as he predicted. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn was there.
Under the umbrella of a proposed Middle Class Recovery Act, the Democratic governor unveiled a number of proposals at SUNY Purchase, including one he believes would be a legacy project.
We want to build the largest state multi-use trail in the nation, the Empire State Trail. It would go from New York City to the North Country, from Albany to Buffalo.
He says to achieve the 750-mile trail, the state would build 350 miles of new trail in three phases for a pathway for hiking and biking, along scenic vistas and through historic communities. The plan includes completing the Hudson River Valley Greenway and Erie Canalway trails by 2020 to realize the Empire State Trail. Cuomo says the project's total cost would be $200 million and proposed $53 million of this for Phase 1. The proposal was met positively by Scenic Hudson and Democratic Ulster County Executive Mike Hine.
The governor's commitment to doing this will just expedite the speed at which we are working. We are committed to making the greatest trail network, really, in all of the United States of America, but we're excited about creating a world-class trail network right in Ulster County. This clearly will help in that process.
Cuomo then proposed a property tax relief plan, saying that apart from the 2% property tax cap, he has done what he can do. He used Westchester County, with 425 local governments and the highest property taxes in the nation, as an example where such a plan would help.
I believe if you put these 425 local governments in the room, and the county executive stood here and said, we're going to stay in this room until we figure out how to save money. Because not everybody needs to buy a new road tractor every 2 years. We can share.
Cuomo, a Westchester resident, says the plan calls for county executives to bring together local governments and other stakeholders to create a plan to share services, find efficiencies, and reduce costs. Cuomo says to then put the plan on a November ballot.
And I've tried every way that I can do it. I am telling you, unless the citizens get into the game, it's not going to change. And the opposition to this is going to be fierce, because it's going to be the entire political class is going to oppose it.
Republican Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro believes the plan is politically motivated.
You cannot merely lecture local governments and say it is your fault. 70 cents of every dollar that I have to charge Dutchess County taxpayers goes to pay for a New York State program, a New York State policy. I would ask that the governor brings all of us together so that we can truly educate and get to solutions that drive down property taxes. And the way to do that is to reduce the state spending and the state imposition of costs onto local property taxpayers.
Hudson Valley Pattern for Progress President and CEO Jonathan Drapkin commends the governor for including the proposal, but believes he faces an uphill battle and is missing a component.
It's tough. It is very hard. And to single the county executives out, it also sort of makes the conversation that they are responsible for the cost of local government and property taxes, but it ignores that there's another bigger piece to that puzzle, which is 65% of your real property taxes go into schools.
Republican Orange County Executive Steve Newhouse is willing to give it a try. And Newhouse welcomed Cuomo's plan in Orange County to accelerate a $150 million reconstruction project to build the town of Woodbury Transit and Economic Development Hub.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. As part of Governor Cuomo's proposals for the new legislative session, the Democrat also aims to reform the state's election system. Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports Cuomo is pushing early voting, same-day and automatic voting registration, which would catch New York up on the surrounding states.
On Sunday, a day before Governor Andrew Cuomo launched his six-city State of the State tour, the two-term Democrat sent out a press release announcing he would push for a series of voting reforms in 2017. The package, dubbed the Democracy Project, includes plans to establish same-day and automatic voter registration in New York, as well as early voting. Cuomo said in the release that his, quote, proposals will modernize and open up our election system, making it easier for more voters to participate in the process and helping to make a more fair, more just, and more representative New York for all, unquote. 37 other states in the District of Columbia allow early voting, and more than a dozen states in D.C. allow same-day registration. Blair Horner, executive director of the New York Public Interest Research Group, agreed with Cuomo's assessment that New York's voting system is antiquated and creates obstacles. In New York, voters must register at least 25 days before an election.
Sometimes those timetables get so twisted that it's even longer. So, for example, if an individual wanted to register in a political party to vote in last year's presidential primary in April, they would have had to have registered to vote by early October.
Reforms have also been sought by State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman. Massachusetts instituted early voting for the first time this past year. According to Secretary of State William Galvin's office, more than 22% of ballots cast in the state in November came from early voters. Some districts saw early voting participating around 40%. Galvin spoke to WAMC ahead of Election Day. He dismissed concerns about the security and legitimacy of early ballots.
If there were ever a question raised, and indeed when there are recounts, the cards are hand-counted. So there's a clear record of what has occurred, and I think that's the best protection. So it's not susceptible to some sort of hacking if it were an all-electronic system. And so I think that a lot of the commentary about this is not applicable, at least to Massachusetts.
Vermont also allows early voting. Vermont Secretary of State Jim Condos previously told WAMC that there's no difference between early and absentee voting.
In some states, you actually have to have a reason. You have to be ill, you have to be out of town, whatever, in order to request or receive an absentee vote. In Vermont, it's not, and we kind of use the words interchangeably.
On January 1st, Vermont became the 14th state to allow same-day registration. Residents can register at their polling place. In a statement, Condos said, quote, "The right to vote is the cornerstone of our democracy, and voter participation in local, statewide, and national elections is fundamental to the success of the democratic process," unquote. Cuomo's latest voter reforms are similar to proposals he introduced last year that gained no traction. Horner says the outcome may depend on how the governor ties his reforms into his budget proposal. He adds that over time, the state has become increasingly democratic and that changing the rules could scare incumbents in the legislature from voting on reforms.
Political realities, I think, are what intrude in New York to some extent, which is consistent with the rest of the country, but to some extent, which is unique to New York, which is that you have this sort of bipartisan legislature, which leads often to gridlock when it comes to reform.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, this week was marked by New York Governor Andrew Cuomo's tour across New York, delivering his regional State of the State addresses. It began in New York City and also Buffalo on Monday with two separate speeches in the morning and in the afternoon. And in the morning, his address, as the New York Times notes, located the cure to the nation's political fever in New York State, implicitly offering himself as an antidote to a president-elect whose name went unmentioned. Remarkably for a politician who has avoided even the appearance of White House ambition since entering the governor's mansion in 2011, his speech also seemed aimed at the audience outside New York.
Well, I don't think there's any question. I've been saying all along you'd have to be a bear walking in the woods if you didn't believe that Andrew Cuomo wants to be president of the United States, something that his father was denied. And I'm sure he expects to be able to position himself to do that. And the speech was a brilliant speech, I'll be honest with you. It really laid out an anti-Trump, pro-federalist agenda. In other words, if Trump is going to pull back on environment and everything else, it's going to be New York and California and those states which went overwhelmingly for Clinton, that will do what they have to do in order to stave off some disastrous policies in their minds and in Cuomo's mind. So it was a good speech. I don't know who's giving him his advice, but this is not the Andrew Cuomo we've been seeing for years.
Meanwhile, the governor ended his series of six speeches in Albany, where the call for ethics reform came. And when it comes to addressing political corruption, he introduced a 10-point plan, which includes limiting outside income for politicians, creating a full-time legislature, term limits for elected officials, an independent advisory opinion before earning outside income, closing the LLC loophole, and more, including reforms to FOIL.
Well, he's saying the right stuff. The question is, does he want it? You know, with Andrew Cuomo, the question has always been, he says things like the Moreland Act Commission, when they're getting hot, he closes them down. Do we forget that kind of stuff? No. Some people will. I don't. And I don't think that the U.S. attorney has forgotten any of that. Pete Bharara, we know that the legislature didn't go for the whole thing. They said, no, we're not going to make that trade. We're not going to get our salary in order to do what's ethical and bringing the legislature up until modern times and making sure that they're not ripping it off. They just refused to do that. So now he comes up and he says, okay, fine, you won't do it. Here's the list of things that should be done, much more than you'd ever want to do. But does it mean anything? I mean, he puts it on the table. He gets credit for putting it on the table, certainly, because he's certainly right about everything he's saying. But is he willing to invest everything he's got in order to make it happen? Really go to war? Well, we know in the past that when he says something, it doesn't necessarily mean he wants it. It just means he's saying it. He says he's going to help the Democrats get back the state Senate. And instead of corralling the independent Democratic conference guys who sold out for a couple of pieces of silver, putting them back with the Democrats, they go on. There's a big suspicion on everybody's parts that he wants them where they are so he can have a state Senate, as his father did, that will be Republican and that he can blame for all of the maladies of the contemporary government and its problems. So are we surprised by any of this? No, it's typical Cuomo rhetoric. But what does it mean?
Alan, one of the other big announcements that came out of the regional state of the state addresses was the agreement to close Indian Point nuclear plant in Buchanan, New York. The reason Governor Cuomo has been calling for that, he says, is because largely of its proximity to New York City and the danger that that causes. However, many officials in that area rely on Indian Point for jobs and for power, certainly, including Rob Astorino and Mark Molinaro, two Republicans who are considering running against the governor, who fired back quite quickly after this announcement and saying they were left in the dark.
Well, you know, how safe can this thing be? I don't think it is safe. I think he's doing the right thing. What can I say? You know, you got New York City sitting there. You got densely populated Westchester County. It doesn't escape us that he lives there. And so the message comes home. And if that thing blows up, you know, you're going to have a terrible, terrible Chernobyl-type accident. Oh, it won't. It's safe. It's this. Yeah, we know. But with some regularity, these things go wrong. They go wrong in Japan. They go wrong at Three Mile Island. They go wrong in so many places. This is not a safe technology. He's thinking of people first. I don't know whether his motivations are political or not, and I don't care. I think he's right.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok.
Thank you.
are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Two environmental groups are launching a campaign in New York to prioritize an environmental bill of rights. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports the campaign features videos of kids affected by contaminated water.
The U.S. Justice Department has issued a statement of interest in a lawsuit seeking to end the solitary confinement of juveniles in an Onondaga County jail. New York Civil Liberties Union staff attorney Phil DeGrange says the suit challenges the ongoing practice at the Onondaga County Justice Center in Syracuse of holding 16 and 17-year-olds in isolation.
We filed the lawsuit in September of 2016 after months of investigating the use of solitary confinement at this jail base in Syracuse called the Onondaga County Justice Center.
In December, the NYCLU requested that the court issue an expedited order, which, if granted, would require the jail to remove children from solitary confinement. DeGrange notes that the DOJ statement of interest cites several court rulings that found solitary confinement of juveniles for short periods of time to be unconstitutional. Some young people spent weeks or months in solitary following relatively small infractions like cursing at a corrections officer. Albany resident Alicia Barraza's son Benjamin Van Zandt was arrested at age 17 and given 4 to 12 years of prison time, ending up at Fishkill Correctional Facility in Dutchess County.
He did about 3.5 years of prison time, and several times they put him into solitary confinement. And the last time that he was in solitary confinement, he took his own life.
In October 2014, Van Zandt was found hanging in his cell. DeGrange says juveniles are often placed in solitary cells next to adults who threaten them with assault, sexual harassment, or other abuse, and the vast majority are being held simply because their families cannot afford bail.
Some of these juveniles are suffering some severe mental harm as a result of their placement in isolation. You know, they're developing mental illnesses, developing suicidal thoughts. All these real strong evidences of harm, I think, for us gave us such concern that we could not wait for this case to be resolved after a number of years. And so we moved for an expedited order. So we requested that the court order that this jail stop placing juveniles in solitary. That was the motion that we filed in December of 2016.
Albany area activists have long campaigned for raising the age of criminal responsibility. Sean Collins is with Capital Area Against Mass Incarceration, which calls on local law enforcement officials and agencies to use discretion in dealing with juveniles.
Use greater discretion to you know, provide more leniency and more compassion in the system and do what they can now, even though there isn't a law on the books that to divert 16 and 17-year-olds away from prisons.
Cities like Albany that practice progressive policing have begun employing diversion programs, but for many, it's too late. DeGrange says the mere fact that the federal government has weighed in on the Onondaga situation underscores the need to end solitary confinement for juveniles, something the federal government and New York State already have done. He expects a ruling in a month or so. The NYCLU would like to see the case resolved as soon as possible. A spokesperson for County Executive Joni Mahoney tells Syracuse area media she finds the issue very troubling and is working toward a better solution. Her office did not respond to multiple requests for comment by WAMC.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1702. Or just listen to our podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.